Welcome to Everyone Loves Guitar, where we sit down and talk with interesting professional guitar players and other musicians, uncover their life stories, and discover what makes them tick. If you love guitar, music, and the backstory of people's lives, then stick around. You're in the right place. If you're enjoying this show and you'd like to support it, go to everyonelovesguitar.com/support. And for information on advertising, visit everyonelovesguitar.com/advertise. Hey, everybody, this is Craig Garber from Everyone Loves Guitar, and I've got a tremendous guest with us today. You know, when I started this podcast, there was a small handful of guitar players. I said to myself, man, I'd love to have these guys on this show. And today I'm really, really privileged and honored to have one of them. My guest today is Christian Carlson. He's one of the founding members of The Quill. The Quill is a fantastic energy, great rock and roll band out of Sweden. They're full of energy. They've been really consistent at making really great records since the mid-1990s. To date, they've released 8 albums and 1 EP over the last 22 years. And I want to just tell you a little story how I discovered these guys. Back in the early 2000s, I was reading a stoner rock blog, which I think is gone. I don't remember the name of it, but I know it disappeared. And I see an article about this album that just came out. And, you know, they're talking about how good it is. And it's by The Quill, which at the time I hadn't heard of. And it has the best album title, though, I've ever heard. And the name of the album is called Hooray, It's a Death Trip, which I just thought was freaking great. So I listened to the record on a little bit and some website, you know, they have the little 30-second samples, and I buy it. And it turns out it's one of the best albums I own now. It's great, powerful rock and roll. It's extremely emotionally compelling. And, you know, every time, maybe I'm thinking like a schoolboy, but when I listen to their music, you know, I always think in my mind, if I have to, you know, save the world and play Bruce Willis in a movie or something like that, and I have to rescue someone, that is the music I want playing in the background. Like almost any song from the Quill's catalog would be perfect. And I just listened to them today in the gym, and I had an amazing workout. So today we're going to talk about the Quill's music, their newest record, which is called Born From Fire, which is just a fantastic record. And we'll get to know Christian Carlson a little bit as well. So without any further ado, Christian, thank you so much for your time. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Christian's
direct from Sweden. We're talking to him. He crawled out of his deathbed with the flu just to get on the phone with us.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. I'm pretty much okay now. So,
well, that's great.
Yep.
Hey, it seems like over the last 10 or 15 years, there's been a tremendous growth in stoner rock or psychedelic music coming out of the Scandinavian countries and the Netherlands. And I was just curious if you had any thoughts on why that is.
Yeah, I have some thoughts, but I don't know if there's one answer to the question. I guess the 70s hard rock bands made it very big in Scandinavia back in the days, and they kept a big audience all the time, you know. Deep Purple keep coming back here year after year, and they play at hockey stadiums here. They play at 5,000-10,000 every time they come here, and has done that since always, you know. It's and then still being a big band around, and I mean, you influence people every time, and it broadens the audience. And if you go to a Deep Purple show, for example, now in Sweden, you have like 3,000 old men, and then you have in the same age as the band, and then you have half of their wives are there, and some of their kids, and some of their grandkids are there as well. And every year, you have a great education system in Sweden for music as well. So, I mean, the guitar teachers, the music teachers that educate kids, you know, college, high school grades. I mean, you have to talk about Ritchie Blackmore and those guys, because it's a big part of music history, and everyone gets into that kind of music, and it appeals to an 18-year-old guitar player that wants to really, you know, be a good guitar player. If you are into that, you have to appreciate Jimmy Page and Ritchie Blackmore or Tony Iommi. And I mean, it broadens the audience every year. And I mean, I know 20-year-old kids that think that, you know, Led Zeppelin's first album is the best album ever made, you know?
Sure.
And then now there are millions of bands that they could prefer instead, but you know, there's something there, and trying to find that kind of vibe in your playing and the style, and you build your create your own band. I mean, if you got those influences, you will sound a bit like that as well. And I don't know, it has always been, you know, rock kids, young rock bands in Sweden looking like they just came out from 1972 with the bell bottoms and shirts and bandanas. And, you know, still, it's something with that early 70s hard rock thing that that keeps coming back all the time in the new bands. And now there are so many new bands that are so much 70s. And if you listen to bands like that are trying to sound like the 70s, I mean, it's considered stoner rock or retro rock, or, you know, because, and it's building, it's got a great big audience as well. So I don't know, it's strange, but I love it because that's the music I like as well. So
I agree.
I don't mind.
No, I agree.
I would hate it if Rat would be the main thing everyone was listening to all the time, you know, trying to look and sound like. I don't know. I listened to Rat. I did as well in the 80s, but just as an example, or, you know, if Twisted Sister was the biggest thing ever that everyone wants to study and sound and look like, that sure would bother me.
So also, I think the term stoner rock, though, is probably a little misleading, you know, because you do have bands in that category where the appeal definitely is to stoners, right? You know, very sludgy, slow, like, you know, it's meant to smoke a bunch of weed and hang out. But I think by and large, you know, most of the bands in that genre are not like that at all. They're just psychedelic 70s music. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I agree. I agree. I try to listen to all this music that's considered stoner. And I agree what you're saying, but and the more sludgy and doomy and focusing on just being heavy, and I don't know, it takes away the interest for me, because, you know, I like a good song, I like some hooks, I like a great musician, I like a great singer, and a lot of those stoner, sludge, doom bands nowadays, they lack a lot of those elements, I guess. I mean, it's a cool sound, it's a cool thing to listen to for a tune or so, but not much more.
Yeah, you're more generous than I do. I couldn't get through a whole song even. let's just switch over. Is weed legal there? That there are so many stoner rock bands? Is that?
Oh, no, it's not. It's in the Netherlands, it's very legal.
Right.
And has always been. So maybe that's one of the reasons it's very big. The stoner style is big in the Netherlands. But here is, no.
It's not.
It's not that big.
Do you get in trouble if you get caught with it there? Or?
Yeah, if you got a small amount, just this is for my own use. Maybe you have to get a fine for a couple of $100 or something.
Oh, wow.
But, yeah. But, yeah, yeah. I mean, if you go to the Netherlands and smuggle a bag full of weed, then you will go to jail probably. But,
sure.
But, yeah, I mean, Sweden is more hard liquor and beer.
Is it legal there for medical?
No, I don't think so. No, it's not.
Interesting. Over here, a lot of the states are, some states are legal, but
yeah,
most states are coming over for at least medical, you know, mm-hmm. Interesting. And like in Florida, it's not legal here. They have it for medical, but I know a bunch of cops and they don't really, like you said, if you have a little bit, they kind of overlook it. I guess if you have a lot, they might do something, but yeah, interesting. I was curious about that.
No.
Hey,
it's always been the homemade vodka and beer.
That's it, homemade vodka and beer. Well, it's, my wife grew up in the UK, and she never – well, she was in a small town, of course, but she said she never had any of that stuff anywhere near her. She never even heard of it growing up. It was just not around there, and, you know.
No, I guess in my teens, I maybe saw someone smoking hash or weed, you know, a handful of times.
That's it, yeah.
Yeah.
See, I grew up in New York City. I grew up, it was all over the place, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, interesting. So you were one of the founding members of the Quill, and I was wondering if the band's changed musically at all over the last 22 years, and if so, how do you feel they have?
Well, we were a band. Most of the members were a band before, like 3 or 4 years before we released the first album. And during those years, we kind of evolved and tried different kinds of, different kinds of music, but some kind of hard rock. But we were influenced by, you know, Guns N' Roses or Red Hot Chili Peppers or the stuff that was around. But then we kind of summoned around this 70s kind of style. Everyone started to listen to Zeppelin and Purple and Sabbath, and this is the thing. We should go more in that direction. And since the first album, I think we have we have had that 70s vibe going more or less all the time, I guess. Very much in the first album, and then maybe it got more, I don't know. I remember Soundgarden and very much Audioslave really got us hooked when those albums arrived. I remember you mentioned Hooray, the Hooray album, and we recorded that just a couple of months after the first Audioslave album was released, and everyone in the band was, what the fuck?
Yeah.
Oh, this is so good. This is what we want, what he's trying to do as well. A great singer and a great groove and heavy riffs, but they got their style, but maybe we got a little closer to that Audioslave thing for an album or so, but because we were so influenced, and it was a really, really good album.
Oh, phenomenal.
The first one.
Yeah. Yeah. Tremendous.
Yeah. I really love that. And how is the sound? You know, we put up the album in the studio and tried with the equalizers. The kick drum is just that frequency. All right, and we, you know, really.
So you compare, the audio. Yeah. Really, that's good. So you did a lot of work on that.
Yeah, we tried to, because it got that really, really big sound, but it's not overproduced. You know, you can really hear the bass and the guitar, and the drums are very in your face and very. Clear, you can hear everything very, very, you know. And we were so amazed about that sound. So, And we even got in touch with with the guy who did the mixing for that first album, the first Audioslave album, because that would be so in those days we had big budget for the albums.
Sure.
But it seemed it wasn't big enough to have these. I don't remember his name, but and we he said, I really like the songs. I would really love to do this. And my price is blah, blah, blah. But I guess that's kind of not your budget. No, it's not. And we were like, maybe you could just mix one song or two and then we could afford it. But and then we just, no, it makes doesn't make any sense.
Sure.
But I love the our Hooray album. It's, I think it's has a great sound as well. So.
It's tremendous, so, man. Is that the most popular album?
Yeah. I don't know about this new album. It seems like it's going really good. I haven't had the figures yet, but the Hooray album and the previous one, the Voodoo Caravan album, is. I think that's those are the two albums that sold the most. We get a Japanese deal for the Voodoo album as well, so that sold a bunch of albums in Japan as well. So the overall sales, I think Voodoo has the best one.
Voodoo Caravan, I think it's called. Is that what it is?
Yeah.
So you got a deal where you're licensing the album over in Japan?
Yeah, that's a separate deal for Japan, just for that album. So we sold quite a lot of albums that. But then something happened with the labels and they changed people and Hooray wasn't interesting in a separate in they weren't interested in having a separate release for Japan, so we just put it in the same package as all the other countries. And so,
I never asked this question, but I'm going to ask it because it's such a cool title. How did you come up with that title, Hooray, It's a Death Trip? That is so funny, man. It's like, that's hilarious.
Yeah, I guess you have to blame Roger, the bass player. We had some meetings where we you know, bouncing around ideas for the album. And then he came up with this, and we thought, what? What's that supposed to mean? It's totally crazy. And then, yeah, but think about it like this. I mean, hooray, because we love it. We love to be here and we love to do this. And it's a death trip because we would probably do this the rest of our lives. And we're totally happy with it.
Right.
So I guess that's the thing. I mean, we are doing this for the rest of our lives. So that's the death trip. I don't know. And then hooray, because we're totally fine with it.
That's so funny. Because that's such a cool album title.
Yeah, it is.
So English is obviously not Sweden's native language.
Yet, no.
Everything is recorded in English. And I was curious if you made that decision early on because you'd have a wider listening base, or how did that work? And was it difficult? Like, where did you guys learn English?
Yeah, I guess since the 60s, everyone learning English in schools from like third grade or something. So all Swedes are pretty good in English. And also all English American TV shows, movies, they don't do overdubbing here in Sweden because we just have the subtitles if you're watching an English or American show or TV or a movie. So you hear the language all the time.
Okay.
So in some of the countries, I think Germany, they do overdub all American movies and they have German actors talking instead.
Right.
So you hear Bruce Willis, you know, It's pretty funny, but I don't speak German. It sounds very funny. You have German voice over the English American movies, but so we are very used to hearing the language. And then, I mean, when we started, I guess there wasn't any Swedish bands singing in Swedish that we liked. We were, I mean, we loved Kiss and Van Halen and you know, Motley Crue and those kind of bands when we grew up. And we thought, oh, they are so fucking cool. And it's, I mean, we thought English, it sounds so cool. when you hear the language, I mean, Swedish is such...
It's difficult.
Yeah.
It's
sounds boring, and it's not a rock and roll language. You can't sing rock and roll in Swedish. So we didn't even discuss having Swedish lyrics. It was so obvious that we wanted it to sound like Judas Priest, and you have to sing in that language. You have to use those words. So yeah,
that makes sense.
Now there are heavy rock bands in Sweden singing in Swedish as well. So.
Oh really? How does that sound?
Yeah, I think it sounds pretty strange, but yeah.
Do you guys still record in a proper studio, or do you do tracks at home and then mix together, or how do you record nowadays?
Yeah, actually, we record in a regular studio, not a big high fashion studios, but good enough studio in our area here where we live. I don't know. None in the band is actually that good sound engineer, so we wouldn't dare do it ourselves, I guess.
Gotcha.
Yeah, we did some guitar tracks or bass tracks on some of the albums at home, but it's too much to think about them. I think I really love to go to the studio. Yeah, here's plug in the guitar, just like go to the show. Okay, and the guy puts on the microphones and you sound check and everything, and then you discuss whatever, and then you just play, you know. And if there's something technical that doesn't work, it won't be my problem.
Sure.
He has to work, and I just focus on playing the guitar. If I had to do everything, I think it wouldn't make a good result.
Take the fun away from what your enthusiasm and energy, yeah. And I'm assuming you guys have such good chemistry together that really helps being all together, no?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's great.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Most of your solos, do you do them right there in the studio, or do you work any of them out ahead of time, or?
No, I don't work them out ahead. I guess I have, I mean, we rehearsed the songs before we enter the studio, and I have some ideas, but most of all, I'm preparing what kind of solo would fit on this song. Is it a melodic solo? Does it make sense having a fast solo? Just screams and noises? That kind of preparation, I guess, I have. So I have some idea of what kind of solo I am doing, and maybe thinking about, do I need some special effects or wah-wah pedal or phaser or flanger or octavizer? Those ideas, I guess, is prepared, but exactly how I will play, I don't. That comes up in the studio, most of it.
Do you your playing is really, you don't just like riff 1,000 notes for no reason. I really enjoy your playing. Your notes are very deliberate and they fit in. And I was curious, did you study music in school, or are you self-taught, or a little of both?
No. Yeah, mostly self-taught. I got a guitar when I was like 7 years or something. Then I got a book with chords. And the first chord, okay, I start on page one. No, there's no reason to do anything else. And then that was the, what do you call it? Barre chord, we call it in
school. Bar.
Bar chord, bar, yeah. So bar chord. It's like, you know.
Oh, there! Oh, you got a flying V, cool.
Yeah. It was like, okay. And then try to see what happens, you know.
Sure.
I started with that, yeah. Oh, this was real out of tune. Okay.
So and, so you're really self-taught, and you've just, you know, you have a good ear, and you've just been playing for 40 or 50 years, and then that's it.
Yeah.
That's great. Right. Let's talk about the new album, and I want to ask you some questions about it and then some of your other albums. I like longer songs because there's just more to enjoy, you know, and I've always gravitated to that music. But I noticed that this particular album, which is called Born from Fire, it's about 10 to 20 minutes longer than most of your other records. And, you know, you got one song that's 8.5 minutes long. You have 5 songs over 6 minutes long. And I was my question is, was that deliberate to make longer tracks, or did it just come out that way once you started working through them in the studio?
Yeah. I guess when we started to discuss making a new album and creating new songs, we were like thinking, what? Because we had a couple of years break, and Magnus coming back as the lead singer again, he's been away for 10 years. And when we gathered together again, the four of us, you know, we started to jam around with old songs and for a couple of rehearsals. And then we talked about, let's try to do something. What kind of era of the Quill history is the one that we really enjoy the most? And then everyone was pretty much with the same, we had the same thoughts, pretty much everyone. And we thought, let's just do songs. Doesn't matter. It could be one riff for 2 minutes, and then it could be a song for 10 minutes with 16 riffs, doesn't matter. I mean, we're not going to have a MTV hit anyway, so we don't have to think about doing 3-minute songs. We just do songs that, oh, this is cool. Okay, what can happen next in this one? Oh, yeah, maybe like this. Yeah, that's cool. And all right, so should we go back, or a new theme is coming? Yeah, let's. All right, this is one. And all of a sudden, some of the songs are, like you said, 6, 7, 8 minutes. And we thought, yeah, as long as it makes sense and it's still is interesting, it doesn't matter if it's a long song. And some of them are a lot of different riffs and themes in them, but some of them are very, very... what do you call it? Monotonous. The same, I think, the one is called... I lost. I have to play it. Okay, let's see. This one. This for like 6 minutes.
That's great, man.
Then it's just one chord. After like 3 minutes, we go. And then it happens. And then it goes back to the thing.
What amp are what amp are you playing out of?
It's just a small box like this.
Yeah.
I had it in my house for 20 years, just a rehearsal amp.
It sounds great, man, because I know you're not blasting it. It sounds really good, especially on Skype. It's not like the best. I wouldn't record a record in this situation, but it sounded really good.
Yeah.
So you basically said, hey, you know, we got some. So Magnus left the band for 10 years. What was that on, just doing other stuff or?
No, I guess by then we had made albums for, I think, 12 years or something. Hmm. And it started to grow bigger and bigger. But the last album we did with him, we felt from the record label that they were not really interested in having us doing another album. So we kind of persuaded them to pay for another one. And we felt like not much anymore. Maybe if it's starting to go downhill, it's not going to be that fun. And he felt that, and now
just needed a break.
This is going the wrong way. I can't enjoy it anymore. I quit, actually, he said. So then the band was over with for a couple of years, and then we found another guy who was up for the singing position, and we did two albums with him.
Full Circle and Tiger Blood, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And then, so when he came back, you probably had it was like, you know, your old friend came back. It was probably a lot of good energy, no?
Yeah.
That's good, man.
Yeah. I mean, living in the same city, and I mean, we see each other every now and then, and how it's always been like that for all the years. So it's no bad feelings or bad blood or anything.
Yeah.
We talk to each other one day and said, come on, Magnus, why don't we start doing some songs together again? I would really love that. Yeah, me too, he said.
Oh, that's okay. Good.
It's a rehearsal. And then we started again. Yeah. Well, no big deal. So, but then, you know, we feel that we got some really chemistry. And we wrote song after song. And then, wow, this is so fun, so much fun. And we have to make another album. We can't, you know. Stop this now. So yeah.
Well, I'm glad you made it. It's a great album.
Look, thanks.
It's real good. It's called Born from Fire. Let's talk about some of the songs on there. There's a song in there called Ghost Horse.
Yeah.
And there's a great guitar solo in there. It's almost like a whole minute long at the outro. And I was curious what guitar you were playing on there, if you remember, and through what amp.
Yeah, actually, I played pretty much the whole album on a Les Paul. I got a Les Paul Standard from '89. It sounds really, really good, and I think that's the one I played on that solo. I guess it could be the black custom as well. I don't really remember, but. It's a Gibson Les Paul, that's for sure.
Hmm.
And then I got a couple of Orange amps that I'm mixed between. So some of the solos were made through the OR-15, a small 15-watt head. and some of the overdubs, but most of the basic guitars were played through the Thunderbird amp, Orange Thunderbird. Yeah,
those are. I think Orange amps are really popular over in Europe, aren't they?
Yeah.
You have another song called "Set Free
Black Crow, and there's like a, you have some great, really good licks all over that song, man. I really enjoyed it. But you have this like a wah sounding modulation. What are you using to get that noise?
That I guess you mean it's an old electro harmonics pedal, a small stone, a phaser pedal from the 70s.
What's called a small what's it called? A small stone?
Yeah, small stone.
EHX.
Yes. Yeah, I really like the electro harmonics pedals. I got a bunch of them. Yeah, they really appeal to my playing and sound.
Yeah, I like them too. I have the big muff down here. I love that one. Yeah.
Yeah. One as well.
But this one's called the small stone, and that gives you that sort of wah sound. It's almost like the wah pedal's halfway down a little bit, you know, but it's just a little modulation. I really like that. On most of your songs, do you have, it's like two tracks usually for guitar?
Yeah. That's the way I've been working or on most of the albums. I do like, I'm really allergic to walls of guitar, you know, like in most metal, there are so much guitar, you don't know if there's a bass player or a keyboard player around because just guitars. And I don't like that. I like more space and air in the sound because my playing is maybe like more 70s like playing, and they didn't do that much back in the days. And but I usually do, for the most of the riff and the basic tracks, there are two guitars. I just go through the song once, and then if it's okay, I do just one more, playing the exact same thing as good as I can do it. Sure. And then we just split the take one guitar to the left and one guitar to the right. That's pretty much, and that leaves a lot of space for the bass player in the middle.
Yeah, you don't play, you know, you did you listen to a lot of Paul Kossoff? Because you don't play like him, but your spacing that you're talking about now is very much like Paul Kossoff, who I love. It never gets mentioned enough. You know, he's just such a great guitar player, man.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, he's got such a great tone, and he's playing the right thing. He's not overdoing it. And I really enjoyed listening to those three albums because you can, as we mentioned with the Audioslave, you can hear everything. You can hear exactly what the drummer is doing and exactly what the bass is doing and the guitar. But it still sounds very massive. I mean, try to make the guitar sound as fat and good as possible, just with one take. And if that doesn't cut it, do one more, and then you have two guitars. But doesn't make any sense to have six rhythm guitars doing the same thing. Then I don't see the point of that.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's just too much. It's like listening. At a certain point, it's actually like listening to garbage is what it sounds like, you know?
Yeah. I would prefer to just have one guitar from top to the end on every song. On some of the old albums, it's like that, actually. Because I feel I'm a bit limited. I go through the song, and then I know I have to do this exactly the same one more time. And then you get a little coward, you know? You don't do those improvised, right in the second thing, because maybe it's too much work to recreate all those small things once more, and then you do very basic. But I try to be as free as possible. But I mean, if you record modern metal, you know, it's a total different thing. Hmm. There's no room for anything extra. You just here's the riff for the verse. Okay, ding, 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 ding. Okay, that's good enough. Then just copy paste 32 times, and that's and then do it one more, and then like that. That's no fun.
Once in a while you have some rhythm tracks underneath though, and then the lead above it. Not often, but there is that on your stuff too. Once in a while.
Yeah. Sometimes, you know, it the solo depends, but most of the time the solo, when the solo comes, it has to be a boost. I mean, you have to go like this as a listener. And depending on the what happens in the drums and the bass and the rhythm guitars, if you take away the rhythm guitars, it just like that, and the solo doesn't have that effect as it's supposed to have. So if it's a heavy riff or something, then it sounds very weird if all of a sudden the guitar riff isn't there anymore. So we try to do it. If it works without the rhythm guitar, I really prefer it, but sometimes it doesn't. And yeah, I mean, what's best for the song is the thing for us.
My favorite Quill song is Man Posed.
Yeah.
From Hooray, It's a Death Trip. I mean, I love that song. I listen to that song probably 100 times, sometimes in a month. If you listen to that when you're in the gym, it's like boom, right? I mean, it's just a very powerful song. I was curious, in the opening of the song, you're playing some effects, and it was recorded a while ago. I don't know if you remember this, but it sounds like there's a little delay, distortion, and then some sort of maybe a whoosh chorus or something. I was curious if you remembered the effects you used on that song.
Yeah, on the intro, the mellow part, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess there was a delay, that's for sure. And I don't know if it's if I used a wah-wah or maybe that small stone again. I'm not really sure.
Maybe even like a slight tremolo effect because it's pulsing a little bit. I don't know. But it sounded like almost, it was like a little bit of a chorus, but not like a jangly chorus, you know, just like a whoosh, like spacey. Like, how did you create the spacey effect? That's what I'm really asking.
I'm not sure, but probably it was that small stone phaser pedal and turned up the phasing pretty fast, so it the swoops whoosh, whoosh, like that, almost as fast as a tremolo. But it is probably that.
I really love that song. Is there any like a backstory to the song? Like, is there any meaning of it? If you know, or
no, I don't remember actually.
It was a while ago.
Yeah, I don't know. Sorry, I don't.
No, it's fine. There's another good song on there called Hammerhead.
Yeah.
Do you remember that old Pat Travers song called Hammerhead?
No, sorry.
It's nothing like the Quills and nothing like it. I'm just curious because I, when I first saw it, I said, oh, they're doing Pat Travers. It's nothing like that song at all.
No. It's one of those songs where you can hear some Jimmy Page influences, I guess. I really like those almost acoustic stuff that he does with a, you know, you mix between major and minor scales. I really love that, that is a good one. Let's see if I can remember.
Oh yeah, here we go.
I just have to. Ah, then I tune down.
Yeah.
Keith Richards tuning. Okay, like this. Something like that.
Yeah, man, that's perfect. It's so nice to watch you play that. That was great, man. It was really nice to see you play that.
Yeah.
So that wasn't an acoustic guitar you were playing.
Yeah, I got this thing I do quite often on that one. And also some of the other songs. I have an acoustic guitar with a built-in microphone. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then just go right to the mixing desk in the studio. Mm. So we got a totally clean sound. And then I reamp it out on my orange amp. And then we fiddle a little bit with the EQ and the distortion. And I guess also some kind of modulation. And then it's a mix between the acoustic guitar and a reamped acoustic guitar with a bit of distortion. And then you have kind of mix with those two sounds in it. That's, I really like that.
Sounds great.
I do that.
It sounds fantastic, man. Yeah, I love it. It's awesome. That was so cool to see you play it. How the hell do we get you over here to the United States, man?
Yeah, I would love to do that.
If you're a booking agent listening to this, get the Quill over here to the States. We need to do that. We set up a Kickstarter campaign. Get the Quill to the United States. Are you involved in the writing of the songs?
Very much so. Yeah. I come up with not every music part, but I do a lot of the music and some of the vocal melodies sometimes. Probably sometimes I have a kind of a whole song in my head and I present it to the guys, and sometimes, you know, I found this cool riff just yesterday. Let me show you, okay? And then the other guys, oh, that's awesome. Oh, let's do this and let's do this. And then it grows into a whole song. And it's a good environment within the band to take out the best from every idea. And I always, you know, sit around playing or hear a good thing on the radio and, oh, that's cool, I should do something in that area, and then, or an album or whatever, and then, you know, create it.
Sure.
And bring it to the guys and then let's see what happens. And sometimes, I mean, it's not that good and they say, maybe not. Okay.
But that's good that you have that chemistry with these guys for so many years that you could, you know, put some, you know, you trust each other that if they're saying no, it's no, you know, that's really good. And not many bands have that kind of longevity, you know, that you've been playing together so long that you have that chemistry, you know, and when you play together, even in the early albums, you sound very tight. It's not like you always guys had good chemistry together musically. You could hear that.
Yeah, I mean, when we started out, we were so young, we didn't have families, and, you know, we could go to the rehearsals each and every day and just play. And we had it was possible to do that for a couple of years, and we did our hours in the rehearsals. And so when we made the first album, we were pretty good already then.
Yeah, I would say, for sure.
Hey, I mean, of course, we're not those you know, dream theater kind of guys, because that was never interesting for us. But we are very good in doing that style of music that we want to play. And that's the only thing that matters, you know.
Yeah.
Sometimes, you know, you feel you're limited in your playing ability, but within this band, everyone is just as good as you need to be. So it works very good.
Yeah, but plus that's what you're known for. You know, if all of a sudden you came out with some sort of, you know, shreddy metal album, I think most of your fans would be like, what, you know, what's going on here?
Yeah.
You know, it just wouldn't be a fit.
That's true.
Where in Sweden did you grow up? Was it like a big city or a small town or maybe something in between? Or
yeah, so it's a small town. I think it's like 6,000 people here in the town where, and we still live here. Everyone still is still around in the same town, and that's I think that's why we still can be a band as well, you know. Yeah, I mean, we have our parents in the area, and now we're our wives and girlfriends, we live with them in, you know, the same within a half an hour from each other, you know, and our kids go to the same school, you know. And we have the same rehearsal space for since we started.
That's great.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's comfortable, but yeah. And it makes you lazy sometimes. But yeah, as long as it's fun, we keep going.
I think people in Europe and just outside of America in general have a better outlook on keeping things balanced. I think here in America, the biggest complaint that most people say, no matter what they do, is they don't have enough balance. You know, it's all about the work, the work, the work.
Mm. Yeah, yeah.
You know, whereas you're just sitting and saying, oh, you know, we get a little lazy, but we're having fun. And I think that's sorry, my cat is about to walk. You know, I think that's where you're playing music ultimately, to have fun.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
That's true.
And I think there's...
As long as, I mean, we don't make lots of money. I mean, we probably lose money if we spend a day or a week on tour instead of go to our regular jobs. That's the case. And the albums doesn't sell that much that we can make a living out of it. But it's the balance, you know, as well. You can put maybe one evening a week to spend with the guys in the rehearsal. And then you go out play some Saturdays and some Fridays. And then sometimes you go away for a week or two and take time off from your day job to do that. But I mean, that's the way it has always been, I guess. Yeah, I mean, of course, we want to be a bigger band and tour the world and make a lot of money. But we also know that to be able to go to that level, you have to have so much luck and the connections and the right, you know, everything to we don't expect that to happen and stay here disappointed because it doesn't happen. We know what's going on, we know how everything works, and yeah, of course we want to go a bit forward all the time, but
you couldn't live in that small town and do that. You'd have to leave Sweden.
Yeah, probably.
In all reality, and you got your families there, and it sounds like you guys are just really happy. I mean, you know, even if you're not making, how many people, you know, the big dollars, how many people can say that they've made 8 great albums.
Mm.
You know, yeah. Hanging out with their best friends, making music. I mean, you have a great body of work that you've done. You know, it's not like you know, this one was good, but you know, really good, really consistent music. You've grown as a player. You know, I think it's great what you're doing, and it's just that, you know, that these guys that are here in the States even are struggling now in music. You know, and unless you're on tour, big tours, it's really tough to make money in the music business.
Yeah, it is. It is. It is. And I mean, if you compare what we have done on the albums and you compare it to those albums that we really like and admire, I mean, we mentioned the Audioslave guys before. I mean, when we did that Hooray album, we were like doing it in a couple of weekends and taking time off from our regular work to go to the studio and spending as small amount of money as possible and trying to fit in like half a year before that. We tried to rehearse and create songs and mix that with all everything else, you know. When you have those bands that can make a living out of music and has done that for 10, 15 years and money isn't an issue and they can do weeks and weeks and months in the studio and that doesn't matter, you know. And we can still make that album that's almost as good as those guys. I mean, you feel, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you kind of envy them in some way. Oh, I wish I could spend 3 months in the studio. That would be so awesome. But maybe not. it wouldn't make that big difference if listening to the album. I don't know. But I mean, we know what where we are in life, and we know what to expect from the band, and we're pretty satisfied, but you always have that, you know, you want to, oh, this is good. We want to do that. And, you know, but if you don't have that, then we will stop. But we always want a little bit more, but we're not frustrated.
Right.
Because the big break isn't coming because we know it's unrealistic to have that. It's cool.
I think everybody wants a little more though. If you're, you know what I say, type A personality. Do you know what I mean by that? You know, if you're driven, if you're ambitious, even if you're here, you want more.
Yeah.
It's just the nature of, you know, being a driven person. And I think in any profession, music business doesn't matter, you know?
Yeah, it's true.
I want to ask you a few personal questions. What's something that you've learned about yourself, you know, throughout this whole journey?
Yeah, I learned that I am a very creative person, and I was very naive in my expectations and what people around me. I mean, when we got our first record label and we thought, oh, now we got a label, then we just, okay, now we will conquer the world. And that really didn't happen. And we thought, why didn't it happen? We got a record label. They're supposed to make us world famous. They didn't. They are stupid, you know. But then as a creative person, I know the people around me and my family and the kids and wife, you know, I could be very, very, what do you call it, unsocial. It's hard to be around a guy who is so much into creating in his mind. Even if I'm not sitting playing guitar, I could have a lyric or riff floating around in my head and just sitting like that. Hello. Hello. No. So in a totally different place than the rest of the people around me. And yeah, and it's in cycles, of course, when you're about to create songs for a new album. It could be a very difficult period for my family.
Sure.
Yeah.
Do any of your kids play music?
Yeah, my daughter plays a little piano, actually. Yeah, that everyone has tried, the music school when they are like 7, 8, 9 years. You can start to play an instrument if you want, and everyone has started, but she's the only one who has continued playing. So, but she quit the school, but she still plays the piano at home and listening to YouTube and trying to figure out all those Ed Sheeran and Rihanna songs on piano, you know. But it's fun. I love to hear her.
Sure.
Because she wants to learn that, and that's more important than going to the piano teacher and, you know, do you like that? Do you like that? This is a G, this is a B. She doesn't know that. It's just like me, you know. Yeah. I want to learn things that appeals to me, and then I try to do that. That's the thing that makes it work in a long time, I guess.
Yeah, the passion.
Yeah.
Who's the most important person in your life?
Yeah, the most important person is my wife, because she has put up with me and pushing me doing my thing, because, you know, when there's too little music around in my life, I'm even worse to hang around with than when there's too much music.
I understand.
she knows me so well that you have to go out and play now. You know, you are miserable. I can see that, you know.
That's good.
Do it.
How long have you been with her?
Since 1994.
Oh, me too. 25 years, yeah. Almost, right? Yeah. It's 25, right? Almost coming on 25 or something, right? No, 24, up on 24. I had 20, I was been 93, so it's 25.
Yeah.
Congratulations. Yeah. That's not easy.
No, it's not.
It's work. You know, you got to both put in some effort to do that and still be happy.
Yeah, of course.
Are there a lot of people over in Sweden, like couples that are kind of our age that are together and they're miserable?
Yeah, I guess there is.
Yeah.
I mean, friends that we hang out with in our age, some of them is like us. They've been together for 20, 25 years and still are happy, but some have, you know, have divorced 3-4 times.
Wow.
And now are single, you know, 50 years old. It's all...
So same as here then. Same as here, yeah. Do you have any hobbies outside of music?
Yeah, I live on the countryside, so I really like being, you know, outdoors, building something in the garden, or go out with the boat, fishing, you know.
What kind of That's fishing? Cool. What kind of fishing do they bat? What? They have bass fishing here in Florida. They don't have that there, do they?
No, it's regular, mostly, what do you call it? Pike?
Pike, yeah. That's what I thought I was going to... Yeah. Yeah, okay. The long, thin fish.
Yeah. That's the big one over here.
When do they run?
It's like March, April is very good here, and also October, November. It's very good as well. In the summertime, it's too warm in the water, so they go deep out in the oceans.
So March, April. It's got to be pretty cold in Sweden, though, March, April, and October, November, no?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is.
Let me ask you just one last question. What's been, do you think, the biggest change in your personality over like the last 10 years? And how much of this was deliberate and how much of it was just a part of aging?
That was a difficult question. Well, I think a little bit of what we just talked about, you know, being pretty much content and satisfied with your life and appreciate what you got, but still have a drive to go a bit further with everything, want to explore new things, want to see how far you can go. But making a mistake or things doesn't turn out as you thought they would be won't break your heart or won't have that really, really bad effect on you anymore because, you know, yeah, that was too bad, but my life is pretty awesome anyway, so it was worth a try, you know. So I guess, and then, see the kids grow up and really appreciate, see them happy. That's the main thing, I think. The worst thing is seeing your kid being miserable.
Yeah.
So that breaks your heart.
Sure, absolutely.
That's maybe the only thing.
Yeah, that is depressing. Well, how can we seriously? How do we get the quill over here?
Yeah, I don't know. Actually, we have to figure out a plan.
Yeah, maybe I could put you in touch with somebody. Let's talk after the call. See if we can figure something out. Hey, listen, I can't thank you enough for your time, and thank you very much for all the music you've made. I've really enjoyed it so much. And I've spent so much time listening to Quill music. And I mean, every song on every CD, I've really enjoyed everything. So thank you very much. And I hope you keep creating music for a long time to come because I'll be listening to it for a long time to come.
Thanks.
And I want to
tell you. It's pretty awesome, man. I mean, we don't consider ourselves as a worldwide band that had reached fans all over the world, but sometimes people like you show up and more so. And that's pretty. I mean, we're just a small band from this shithole in the south of Sweden. Yeah, we have done albums, but has it really made an impact? And it obviously has.
Yeah, it has, for sure, man.
To people, it's amazing. I'm really thankful for that.
Well, I think that's the beauty of music. You know?
Yeah.
It has that effect. How can, you know, you're sitting, what's the name of your town?
Mönsterås.
Oh my God. I'm not going to even try to say. But just how else can a guy from your town affect a guy living in Tampa, Florida, who's from New York City with your music? And that's the beauty of music. And that's why I love so much talking to so many cool guitar players, man, because it's like, you know, it's just so cool, you know, to you could play something and I could feel a certain way. I mean, seriously, when I listen to like anything on Hooray, I'm like, fuck, I'm ready to like, you know, just conquer, you know, find a country to take over. You know, I just feel so pumped up and so like ready to kick ass. And on a lot of your albums, the last album is wonderful, you know, Born from Fire, beautiful album. So just keep doing that, man, and I really appreciate it. Let me tell everybody where to find the Quill. First of all, if you don't know the band, just start listening to them on Spotify or whatever to do. Just support them. They're a really good band. If you like 70s rock, there's literally no way you can't enjoy these guys. You could find them on Facebook at The Quill Sweden, and it's The Quill, Q-U-I-L-L, Sweden, S-W-E-D-E-N. You can go to their website and you can buy their music literally anywhere. I mean, they're anywhere, you know, Amazon, iTunes, anywhere that music is sold or streamed. Get it. Check them out. Support them. Christian's an amazing guitarist. This is a real creative band. Magnus sounds great. I can't believe you guys don't speak English all the time, because I'm sitting there listening and like, you know, holy shit, I can barely speak English and I'm from here. I don't know how you guys do it. but listen, man, thank you again for your time. I really appreciate it. It's late at night there. You're coming out of being sick. So thanks very much for everything, man. I really appreciate it. And please, everybody, check out The Quill. They're awesome. Check out Christian Carlson. He's a phenomenal player. Next time he comes on, we'll talk more about his beautiful Les Pauls. And that's a wrap. Everybody, thank you so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed this as much as I did. Christian, you have any final words of wisdom? Or not wisdom?
No. Just if you play music, just play the music you love. That will keep you playing the rest of your life. That's the only thing.
Those are words of wisdom by me.
You can't play anything else. Just the thing that comes out from your heart.
Thanks, man. Going. That's very smart. Hey, thank you again, Christian, for spending time with us. I appreciate it. Everybody, go to everyonelovesguitar.com. Sign up to get notified about future episodes, along with some great stuff we're rolling out. And remember, happiness is a choice. So be nice, go play your guitar, and most important, as Christian said, have fun. Till next time, peace and love, and I am out. I hope you enjoyed this episode of Everyone Loves Guitar. If you did, make sure you go to everyonelovesguitar.com/subscribe and subscribe to the audio podcast and to our very active YouTube community. And if you have any comments, please write me at everyonelovesguitar.com/hello. We'll see you on the next episode. Until then, make sure you choose happiness, relax, and have as much fun as possible.